outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Isn't there a second piece? Like you said, there was a part two or another part of the picture that you had. Like, where do we go from here?
Well, there's more of the vision thing that's unfolded. And if you haven't listened to last week's, I'd encourage you to go back and try and figure that out. Yeah. 2 weeks after this, I was spending some time and the vision thing started again. It ran really quickly through the whole thing again. I'm watching the whole thing, but this, instead of the first time, it was like 20 minutes. This time it was like three. And I got back and I got through the whole thing to the city waiting to be born. I could see that whole thing happening. And then in the middle of the city, as it began to get bigger and take more of the field of vision, I saw a sparkle in the middle of the city.
Okay.
Now, I've seen this before in this vision thing. I've seen this thing. I describe it as a jewel or a treasure. There's something that begins to form. It started forming first inside the eye that I see, and then it began to be outside of it. But it's made up of the same, of whatever the filaments are. I know probably it's really frustrating to describe this because the filaments are the sparkly orangey thing that's like a net, but it's not an organized net. It's not like a fish. It's not geometrical. It's just an interplay of interconnectedness in the planet and the world, superimposed over everything. And then when I first started seeing this thing, which I called the jewel to some extent, or the church, there's this one piece of something that it takes my breath away when I see it. And I've seen it probably 20 times over the 3 years. When I see it, I'm spellbound. It is more beautiful. And I'm a sunset sunrise guy. I like both. Man, when the colors are there, oh my gosh. I can sit and watch a sunset unfold or sunrise. This is better than that. This is better than anything I've ever seen on this planet. And it's more, takes my breath away. But the first glimpse of it is this. It doesn't have substance, which is weird. It's not like a thing. It's a space, like a hologram of color and light and sparkle and glory. Glory is what I first think every time I see it. I think of glory. Yeah. I think this is the treasure. This is the pearl of great price. This is the treasure hidden in the field. This, when I see it, I would literally give everything, and not to possess it, because I don't want to possess it. There's no desire to possess. It's a desire to just be in its sphere of influence. Just be touched by it. Just be aware of it. And I've watched this jewel over years. I've wondered, what is this thing? What is it? And then I saw the sparkle in the city as it was gaining some traction and growing. And I saw it inside the city. And immediately I think Revelation refers to the New Jerusalem, and it has no need for a sun because Jesus is the light of that city. And so I think this is the first time I've really put person to it, that maybe this isn't something, maybe this is Jesus's presence. And I don't know what all that meant, but I was just watching it inside the city. Yeah. And then the ripples of that were going out, and they were lighter. The ripples of the other city, they were kind of like darker ripples, like this is causing pain somewhere. This was glory kind of breaking out. And as I watched it for a while, because I just, like I said, I could lay there all day. It's a little, we call it a Hawaii bed. There's a little outdoor bed we have in the Hawaii part of the garden. It's just my favorite place to be. It's my favorite place to be with God and to read and to just be out in nature and when the weather permits. And I saw it and I tie it to Jesus. I'm thinking maybe this is what it's, this is the glory of Jesus. This Shekinah glory. And then as that was ending, that time with it was ending, I heard this: give way to the treasure. And I knew what it meant instantly. I mean, I did.
Really?
Oh my gosh. This was the treasure. This is the jewel. give way to the treasure. And I was ending my time because I had to jump on a phone call with somebody going through something a little difficult.
Yeah.
And what give way to the treasure meant, I mean, as soon as I heard it, 2 Corinthians chapter 4, this treasure we have in earthen vessels, this treasure, because I've called it the treasure for a long time, this treasure we have in earthen vessels. And it was like Jesus telling me, give way to the treasure, which meant as specific as the phone call I was about to have, but in more general terms, there's a treasure I've placed in you, give way to it. When it moves, don't restrict it. Don't get in the way of it. Just give way to it. It wasn't like I can create it or make it. It was give way to it. And in the phone call I had with somebody shortly after that, we were talking, and there's something that begins to rise in my heart. I recognize it more as we're talking about it. And then I'm wanting to get on to other things. And I just remember that give way to the treasure. Let the treasure just settle. The person's just beginning to grasp what that is and give way to it. And I've had that now happen a number of times. This has probably been 6 weeks ago. And I'll be in the middle of something and I need to give way to the treasure because I'm such a mind guy, an intellect guy. I've got people ask me questions or we're processing things. I've got lots of stuff to say. And I'm always thinking out of, not always, but often thinking out of my head. And this was recognize the treasure that God's placed within us. And the treasure isn't your gift. It's not your ability. It's not that. The treasure is presence, finding a way out for someone else's benefit. Does that make any sense? Pick on
yes and no. I mean that
like you're honest.
Yes, in the fact that I have some inklings about what that might look like, maybe. But man, as you described it though, especially as you're describing the idea of it's not your gifting, it's not even like, it's not even the like purpose that God has set before you or the reason why he's put you on the earth, that it's presence and allowing that presence that God has placed in you to engage with another person, especially to engage with another person's heart. That makes me think back to what would community be like if we had community like this? Like, so what we talked about in the last podcast, what would community look like if I was giving way to the treasure, especially like getting consistently aware of when God is wanting me to give way to the treasure in the presence or the conversation or the class that I'm teaching or whatever it might be. Yeah, that's really intriguing to me. I don't know what that looks like. I mean, maybe I do, like, because there's part of me that's like, I recognize this. But there's a part of me that's like, yes, but I can't put any language around it. And I have an inkling, but I don't even know if it's even that. Like, it's like a little spark kind of, I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah, we're probably really stretching our podcast audience here with some of the stuff that we're talking about. I'll give you an example of it, though. When I was in Minneapolis a couple weekends ago, now three probably when this airs, since we're recording it a little bit early, since Sarah and I are going to be out of town for our anniversary for a little bit. We were talking in a room, Q&A, stuff going on, and all of a sudden I can still see her face. I caught the eye of a woman on my left in this group. And the look in her eye, and I don't know what it did to me, the look in her eye reminded me of Sarah at the depth of her traumatic stuff. Mm. Desperate, just hurt, wounded.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to call her out specifically, so I didn't, but I just began to say, I found myself saying to the room, and especially to the women in the room, I'm sorry for what you've been through. I'm sorry for the way men made you dress. I'm sorry for the way you have been treated as a second-class citizen. I'm sorry for the abuse that you suffered. And I don't remember all the words I said.
Yeah.
The moment I started talking, I felt treasure moving. I had other things to say, other things going on in the conversation.
Yeah.
But I just let that flow out. And I don't remember all that I said about owning. And I think a big part of it, because I'm sorry. Here's what's weird for me. When my close friend in high school died at 17 of a brain tumor, at the funeral, I remember an older person came up to me and said, "I'm really sorry for what happened to Lindsay." And I said, "Why? You didn't have anything to do with it." And I was, it was because I always saw apologies as accepting blame, right? That's how I saw it. And so when somebody's apologizing to me for my friend dying, that's how I see it. I don't see it as acknowledging my pain. I see it as you're trying to be blamed. It's not you. At the time, I was really mad at God. We'd prayed for him. We'd prayed for all kinds of stuff. And that, and I came out with a rude response, and I didn't know what else to say.
Yeah.
But I realized most of my life until more recently, I was talking with someone this morning, and I said, the things I'm discovering right now, I wish I'd known when I was 40, 20, 30. I can't believe that I get to this stage in my life, and finally some things make sense that I've struggled with my whole life. But I noticed that people, and then the feedback from that time in Minneapolis with those women, and there was hardly a dry eye in the crowd while that little 10-minute thing was going on. But the next day and a half as I was there, so many women came up to me saying, "That really touched me. No one has ever acknowledged my pain before." And when you did, it moved something in me. And I'm going, well, I think it's just me. I think it's Jesus acknowledging your pain. And that's one of the things that's become clearer to me is I think what's really significant in the pains I go through now, whether it's the cancer, rejection of people, whatever, is that God, I really do sense God saying, "Wayne, I'm sorry you're going through this." And I didn't have a God who I could hear say that to me before 10 years ago. Because
really,
well, yeah, because God, why would he be sorry? He could fix it if he wanted to. He could change this. So for him to be sorry for, it's like somebody whacking you with, it's like your parents spanking you with the stick going, "This hurts me worse than it hurts you. I ain't buying it. I never bought it once. I'm sorry. I have to do this." That it wasn't that. I heard it for the first time when going through this stuff with Sarah while she was still gone. "I'm sorry you're going through this." And I'm like, what? Because part of me wants to blame you for it. Part of me wants to, and then if you're going to apologize, then are you blameworthy? But what if my sorrow to them, when people called it an apology, I didn't argue with them because it was, they were obviously being touched in a wonderful way. I wanted that to continue. Inside, I'm feeling like it didn't feel like an apology because I didn't do it to them. And so I'm not apologizing for what happened to them. I can't. Only the perpetrators can apologize.
Yeah.
What I can do is acknowledge, "I'm sorry you're going through this," which I feel like God said to me about surgery and about cancer and about Sarah. "I'm sorry you're going through this." And there's no sense of, well, then you should fix it. There's a sense of being seen, being acknowledged, and there's a lot to be gained in the acknowledgement of pain. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've had a lot of experiences over my lifetime and just being in conversation with people that a prompting, a nudge, an inkling, not to take the blame of it, but to really acknowledge and honor what it was that they had experienced.
Yeah.
And sometimes that was in a group, sometimes it was to an individual. And thinking about that, that makes a lot of sense because there was in the past, if I would have said, "I'm sorry," I would have been kind of like the sin eater, right? Where I take that on myself. There was no taking of on of it, anything when those moments came through. It was like a release of something, a giving of something, but it didn't cost me anything. I don't know if that makes any sense at all. It was just, it was almost like imparting a gift that wasn't mine to hold on to. It was something that that other person needed to hear. And I got the privilege to be able to be the conduit for them to hear it in their world or into their life or into their heart at that time. And it brought joy to me to be a part of it. And it brought joy to them. But there was no, like, there was no burden that came with it, if that makes sense.
Exactly. You're describing the experience that I had that day. I'd even got away from it later and really would have said, if it didn't sound too self-aggrandizing, it feels like one of those things in which Jesus would have said, wow, flesh and blood has not revealed this to you, but my Father in heaven.
Yeah.
That whole moment was God sharing a treasure with people. And I got to be in the way of that in a good way, not in it, but give way to it. Yep. I got to be the person standing in front when it's being said, but the impact it's having on people is way beyond Wayne saying it.
Yeah.
That makes sense?
Oh, absolutely.
So, and the next day and a half, I mean, so many people sat down and just said, something broke in my heart when you were saying that. Hmm. No one has acknowledged my pain before. No one has said, oh, I'm sorry for what you went through. It seems, and it just, I can think of doing this in my past any number of times. It seems like we just want to, when something's wrong, and we just want to kind of gloss it over and just move on. And let's not focus. If we just focus on it, it'll grow bigger, all that lie. Instead of, man, let's just acknowledge it. And I know for these people who've been part of this group for a long time, one of the real parts of it unraveling was that no one could acknowledge even those, especially those who are responsible.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one thing for someone to acknowledge their pain who doesn't cause it. It's another thing for someone to acknowledge the pain and apologize for their part in it. That holds tremendous power, even more than my just acknowledging pain. I've been part of those other things where I did something, and yes, it hurt somebody, and yes, being able to own it and say, man, I'm really, really sorry. And those are very redemptive as well. And to me, that's an expression of the treasure. I've had other conversations where it's clear there's the thing that I would do and I can give and I can be part of. And there's a treasure overflowing in this moment. And I think about the Just Love latter chapters in Just Love that Toby and I wrote, where the life of God, the river that flows from God's heart and flows to us and flows through us to touch the world around us. And when that happens, it's such a godly, holy moment. And it's not like we're uninvolved, but neither are we the cause.
Yeah. Well, and at times, I don't know if you've experienced this, but as you're describing that, at times there, I'm thinking about moments where I felt like something needed to be said or something needed, like, and so then words start coming out of my mouth. Yeah. And it's like I'm also sitting in on the conversation, even though the words are coming out of me. It's almost like I'm also a spectator, and the words that are coming out of my mouth are just as impactful and a blessing to me and my own life and my own journey with Christ as they are to the other person that's in the conversation with me.
Yeah.
And those moments are so intriguing because it's like, I don't know if they realize this or not, but I'm getting blessed by what's coming out of my mouth because it's not me. Like it's going into a space in my heart that I didn't even know that I needed to say or didn't even know that I needed to know. Yeah. And yet somehow God is using me as a doorway or window for his kingdom to come through. And part of me is receiving a gift, a blessing, an impartation simultaneously as this other person is experiencing it as well. And those are always really interesting. Like those ones, I'm like, okay, I don't even know how to have the conversation after with them, because it's like, do they realize that I just got my world rocked by that? Even though it came out of my mouth, like, I don't know. So,
yeah. And I think that's where we touch that flow of life, that flow of love that comes from God's heart. There's a treasure in here, that treasure in earthen vessels, or Jesus talking about out of your being will flow rivers of living water.
Yeah.
When you're, I guess, free enough or relaxed enough to give way to something Because I can get in a room and I know I can trust is not the word I want to use, but I can be confident in the things that I might say or do or things I know that might be helpful here.
Yep.
It's a very different thing to look for where's that flow of love and life that's bigger than what I would say or do. And what I've loved about give way to the treasure, it's not find it, seek it, manipulate it, try and make it happen. It's just simply when that life makes itself known, give way to it. Just give way.
Hmm.
Which is so much easier than having to try channel it, be a conduit for it, or all the things that would put something back on me. It's just like, don't get in the way. Just let it come. Hmm. Let it flow. Let it touch what it touches and move on. And it has been, the last 6 weeks has been crazy with that awareness shaping my heart.
I guess the intriguing thought that's going through my mind now is I'm thinking about some of the more charismatic spaces that I've been in, where I think individuals have genuinely experienced what we're talking about, but they get a taste for it. They get to be involved in it a couple of times. They give way and they see God move in somebody else's life and in their own life simultaneously. And it's powerful. But then it moves into the space where it feels like it's being manufactured. It feels like it's being forced because they tasted it once and they're like, oh, I want to get back to there. But they try to do it in their own strength. And so how, like...
Or they've seen its impact on others.
Yes.
And how people look at them when you've been the conduit of that. And then people look at you like, wow, that was really powerful. And if you take all that on...
Yeah,
it will corrupt you because now you want to pretend it. Now you want to control it. Now you want to,
And that's, I think that's the other piece of it because I don't know about what, I would love to see what your experience has been. Often I feel really sheepish when I'm around people after an experience like that has happened because it's like, I do not want you to accredit that to me. Yeah. That was not me. I had nothing to do with that. Like that was so outside of my control and my ability to manufacture and my own gifting. Like, please do not attribute that to me. And so I almost feel like sheepish, shy, a little reserved, kind of standoffish. Like, I don't know because the pressure, the thought of trying to manufacture that in my own strength is like, no. Like that would be like, I will not sustain that. I could not sustain that. And so how have you, like when you experienced like what you did in Minnesota, was it challenging to be with them the next couple of days? Like, I don't know. What were your thoughts on that?
It wasn't. And I don't mind when people express that. It, depending on the nature. One of the things I don't want to do is spoil it. So I don't want to offer too much apology or too much whatever, or put the focus on me, even if the focus on me is trying to be humble and put it all on God. Yeah. So what I generally say to people is something like, I think Jesus did something really special there. So it's not, I'm not trying to minimize me. I'm not trying to, but I think that changes the nature of the conversation. That's what I look for. Cause I think when people so try to deflect their responsibility for something, it really just taints it a little bit.
That's fair.
That's what I think it does. So my desire is just to acknowledge, that was special. And I think Jesus gave us a moment. And I'm part of that moment. And you're part of that moment. And we can be grateful for it. So I tried to be something, because I'm more interested in letting them explore what it's doing in them. Because that river, like, treasure flowing in them is not just, hey, the moment was a blessing, but now what is the outflow of that? What's the impact of that? How is that settled in your heart in the next 24 hours? What are you thinking about now that's that was part of what that acknowledgement did for you? You know? And yesterday at lunch, it was something different for this guy who had been through this big betrayal. And I don't even talking about it on a podcast I puts an artificiality to it that scares me. Like the next conversation I have with somebody is going to go, any treasure flowing in there for you right now? And I'm saying, oh gosh, please don't do that to me. Because it's not, I don't think some of the words I offer people are any less valuable than this treasure when it comes. It's all God's anyway. It all belongs to Him. But I don't want to draw attention to the form. I just want to live in the awareness of, okay, God, when your treasure wants to find expression, I want to give way to it.
Yeah.
Rather than contain it, control it, anything else, or even delay it, because I want to get my point in first, or I want to do something else.
Dude, I really like that. I deeply appreciate that, because I, you know, not wanting to taint it or minimize it or take away from it by any means. Absolutely. I really appreciate that. I think the hardest times for me, or I guess the most awkward times or challenging times for me personally, was when that happened in a counseling session when I was practicing. Because then it's like, you can't ask me to do that again. Like, you can't ask me to manufacture that again. Like, if we had a powerful moment, you know, like I would try to acknowledge it and be like, man, there was something really big that moved there. Like, and that was a pleasure for me to be able to be, an honor for me to be able to be involved with that. But I remember I have a few different client experiences that I can think back on where it was like, man, that I hope you don't think I'm that good of a therapist, because I will not be in my best day be able to replicate what happened, you know, in our last session or whenever we met that previous time. And so that, like, that was always intriguing to me, because at least initially, like early on in my practice, I really felt this pressure to come through for my clients, because they were coming to see me and they were seeking help from me, and
they're paying you money. And
absolutely. There's that icky kind of sticky space there.
Well, I want to give them value. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, yeah. So that was always interesting and tough for me to kind of navigate that. It's gotten better over the years. And yet, I don't know, even then, like,
it's strange though, to hear you talk about that, like that pressure to replicate, or don't expect the next time to be that good or whatever. I'm hearing you talk about it. I've never had that thought. I've never, in the most special things God's done, I don't think about, oh gosh, now the pressure is to do something better the next time, or at least maintain that, or whether it's been on an individual level or in a room with people in it and a group. And I'm wondering why. I just have not had that reflection. I'm willing to let God do what God does and not take ownership of it and not take responsibility to replicate it. I don't know why I have never had that I think of. I'm trying to think back, even back to my pre-Living Love days. Did I feel like... Yeah. And I think I had an outsized sense of ego that said, whatever they're enjoying here, I can do that again, whether it's teaching or whatever. But it's interesting, I've never, when something really moves in a special way, that we all got to know is bigger than ourselves. And if some people are confused about that and say, hey, Wayne, can you do that again?
Yeah.
Or I have people walk up to me sometimes, they look me in the eye really odd and they go, do you see anything? Honestly, God's not that freaky, man. If I have something in my heart, it will get out. If I don't, God has a million other ways to get to it. It's kind of like my golf game. You know, I'd go out and have a round of golf and hit some shots that, man, and get a great score. I haven't had, but it always returns to the mean. I know that doesn't mean I figured this game out. The next time I play, I'm going to hit all those same shots, even though I sit there and go, okay, I'm lined up exactly the same way. But I know the ball has as much chance of going wickedly right as it does to go straight at the thing I'm aiming at.
I think, like, for me, I think it has been the process for me of untangling that from my identity, because that's how deeply ingrained the need to perform in order to be adequate, to be worthy of love, to be worthy of somebody else's time. That's how deeply ingrained that need to perform and to come through was ingrained in my heart. And so for God to untangle that and to put me at ease of being able to rest in that, not worry about it, not take any responsibility for it, just be able to enjoy it. I mean, that it's still a battle. I wouldn't say it's nearly the battle that it was 15, 20 years ago or even 10 years ago. But I think that it just, it's been very much a part of the process that God's been untangling in my own life of, no, that this isn't on you. You can enjoy this. Like, but when both self-pressure, or I guess self-created standard, as well as externally created or expected standard, they were both pretty harsh. And they were about as close to human perfection as they could get, which did not leave a whole lot of room for error, to say the least. So.
Sure. And I'm thinking of 2 Corinthians chapter 4 while we're talking, where he says, for we preach not ourselves, but Jesus Christ as Lord, ourselves as servants for Jesus' sake. For God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, made his light shine in our hearts to give us the light of the knowledge of God's glory displayed in the face of Christ. Boy, that describes that treasure.
Yeah.
And then he says, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that this all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. So it would say that the reason Paul would delight in this treasure getting out is it does take the focus off of us. Strangely, the way we've done Christian ministry stuff, by glorifying the vessel more than the person of Christ in us, is that it leads to that. And we have a whole industry system of Christian celebrity, that money is made and dependence is enhanced and all that kind of stuff. But Paul's saying the very reason we have the treasure is so that it focuses on him and not on us. And we've had so many decades and centuries probably of focusing the gift of ministry on the person instead of it to the treasure shows the all-surpassing power is from God and not from us. And what do you say early in 1 Corinthians about, we didn't come to you with wise and persuasive words so that your faith would rest on us, but so your trust would be on him. There seems to be something that we have missed in our approach to ministry, by and large, and particularly the charismatic wing of the body of Christ, is we've put a lot of glory on the vessel. When the vessel is just broken. The vessels, we're jars of clay. My gosh, whatever God gifts and does, it's nothing to do with Wayne or Kyle or anybody else. It has to do with God wanting to show himself. And if we can stay out of the way of that and acknowledge in very simple ways, God did something really beautiful there.
Yeah.
And we've enhanced, I hope, the ability for people to see Jesus and not get lost on the vessel. But the vessel's something we can control. We think we can, or we'll have that speaker at our next conference because he's really good at this, or he can manufacture that. And I'm sure you've done it. I've done it at times when you know how to manipulate a room to feel spiritually moved when it's mostly your power doing it.
Yeah.
I've done that.
Oh, I've done that.
And then people go, oh, it's his thing. He can do that. He can make us all feel closer to God by the spooky stuff he does, which is, that's why I'm hesitant, honestly, to share too much of this vision stuff, even though we've pretty much last 2 weeks pretty much run down the whole thing. Because it is so weird. It doesn't have, doesn't fit in what I understand vision to be. Like, you have a vision, you see something, and God teaches you something. But this has actually become, even though it doesn't happen all the time and it's definitely not in my control, but it's become a way of being with God. It's a way of being with him.
Yeah.
And all of the stuff, all the colors, all that could go away. And what I'm treasuring is the being with God in a way that lets me participate in his joy and his treasure and his glory and his passion, like we said last week, for the city giving birth to, the city waiting to be born. I get to celebrate that, and I get to be inside now just to watch my life differently when I'm talking to people or with people or whatever. Is there a treasure that I get to give way to here. It's not always so. Sometimes it's just, yeah, what things God's done in us and the fruit he's born and talking and sharing and life comes out of that. And sometimes there's something different that has a different power than just words. It's a treasure to be left. And I think we talked a couple of weeks ago about not trying to graffiti that with God's name on it and, you know, paint a, oh, God did that. It's amazing. In some kind of self-deprecating way. In the same way, you wouldn't want to draw, oh, yeah, I was really good. Man, I really had my Wheaties that day and blew them out. Yeah, I just, if we can keep it out of either of those and just saying the all-surpassing glory is in the treasure. He's the treasure. Mm-hmm. So if we keep our heart there, I think that this kind of stuff gets to keep unfolding in the way we live.
One of the follow-up thoughts that I had was, but how do we do that? Like, how do we walk that line where we don't diminish our identities in Christ? So as a beloved creation of the Most High King, and not diminish that identity, that space, but also hold it in reverence, in alignment with who he is in the world and who his power is in the world. And so looking at how to navigate that tension between the two, right? Or what you were just talking about of like diminishing, like the false modesty, like the religious false modesty of, oh no, I had nothing to do with that. You know, that was all God in me, you know, blah, 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 blah. I'm just a piece of dirt. You know, like I'm not even clay yet. Like God hasn't even, you know, he hasn't even molded me yet. I'm still the dust on the ground kind of a thing. And
yeah, it's not
that
helpful,
to me is just like, ugh, like, come on. Like, get out of here. Yeah. Like it's, that is dripping in ego. Like, don't even go there.
It's so easy to get on the weeds on either side of this thing. Self-aggrandizement. Yeah. I'm responsible in some way to the self-deprecating. Oh, it's just Jesus. I'm but a worm just meandering along here. And I think the reality of just being real, relationally real with people, as honest about your struggles as you are about, which we've tried to do on the God journey, to be honest in the struggle and honest in the unfolding of God's glory so that nobody has any idea that we're anything different than just brothers on a journey trying to learn how to live in this life. And when it works well, when something happens, it's just bigger than ourselves to celebrate that and not be convinced that that's who we really are and we can manufacture that anytime we want to. Because you're right, that'd be a pressure. Who'd want to live under that? That wouldn't.
I remember thinking about that. I remember the flight to LA when you guys invited me, you and Sarah invited me to come out and be a
part of it. I invited you and Sarah horned in on the invitation.
Correct. Yes. There we go. Fair enough.
And I'm glad she did.
Like I remember sitting like the entire flight from Denver to LA. I'm just sitting there in the seat being like, Lord, you better come through in this because I can be a good friend to Wayne. Like I know that I can be present with my friend that is hurting. And that's, you know, if that's what you're asking me to do, then I'm in and I'm willing to do that, whatever that looks like. But if there's something more that you're wanting to do, you better freaking show up because this is uncharted water.
Scared, were you?
Oh, here are two people that I love dearly that have had a huge impact in my own marriage that I've done life with for, over a decade. And now they're navigating one of the biggest potential heartaches in either of their lives. And I'm stepping into that space. And as 30 years your junior. And that was just one of those moments of like, it was complete release of like, Lord, I have no idea what you've got up your sleeve in this, but I'm willing to be available. I'm willing to be a conduit of whatever that looks like. But that was probably one of the more like seasons of trepidation prayer in that 2.5 hour flight from Denver to LA that I can remember.
Didn't get much reading done, huh?
No, there was no reading. There was a whole lot of journaling and a whole lot of prayer that happened on that flight.
And the great gift you provided was just a safe place for Sarah to come into a conversation.
Yeah.
With me. And then that was going to be, I think, made or broken by how I treated her.
How you responded. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I could have tried to fix everything and go through this letter and argue with her. And oh my gosh, it would have turned into a disaster. I so appreciated how God had been spending 3 weeks preparing my heart for that moment.
Yeah.
And I didn't think that moment would come for 3 or 4 months at the outside. It was not in my expectation that would happen that quickly. And even then, the sit down was only to talk about grandkids after divorce. It's all she wanted to talk about, which is all she got to talk about. Because I decided I'm gonna take God at His word. I'll bring her back to you. So God, you get to do it. And I look back now and just grateful. 3 weeks doesn't seem like that long now. It was eternal at the moment.
Yeah.
And my thinking that this could have gone on for 6-8 months longer. I mean, I had no idea how long this would be our reality. And so grateful that God brought it back the way it did. But you provided that safe spot, man. When she pulled up in my driveway and you were standing there, I've said it before, man, I was like, to me, she was the God I wanted to connect with. And she was, I was her husband and I wanted her to connect with me, but she didn't feel safe with me. You standing there made her feel safe. And that's what Jesus did for us with the Father. By standing there, He made it safe for us to be with the Father we were afraid of. And He still does that. Jesus still takes that place of being the one who says, look, I want you to know I'm safe. Come here. And then He's right there. So now we're all safe because I'm not going to do anything bad. I'm not going to hurt you. Not that I wanted to hurt Sarah or that God wanted to hurt us, but having that presence in that moment was life-changing. And it opened a pretty wide door for us to have a different way of communicating to each other that made sense through her trauma. Yep, I'll always be grateful for that, for sure. That was a treasure that day.
That was a treasure that day.
And so now I just look to, I love waking up going, how do I give way to the treasure today? And I don't get real nuts at like eagle-eyed or anything. It's like, when it happens, I'll be aware. And if it didn't happen today, it didn't happen today. It's so much easier to live relaxed than it is to feel responsible for everything God wants to do around us, for sure.
Yeah, just that. Again, back to rest, love, and play, that presence of I'm attentive, my ears are open, my eyes are open, my heart is available, but there isn't this urgency of performance or having to come through or I need to spot it right now, or even if I miss it, then then that's a major mark on whatever. No, it's Lord, what are you up to in the world around me? How can I connect with that? How do I get to enjoy that? How do I be a part of the ongoing work that you're doing in the world? And
The fear of missing it almost always assures us that we will. And if we can relax, then we see stuff we never planned on seeing.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.